The first year, I don't think I slept more than 3 or 4 hours a night because, you know, getting things up and running, getting, taking anything that came my way,
sure,
because of the fear of, you know, well, what if this is it? What if there isn't anything next month?
Yep.
And so this year has been, you know, I think I've really taken a step back and been able to take a look at like the big picture.
Welcome to Architecture, Design, and Photography. Today we have the illustrious Heidi Kern with us to talk about past, present, and future, because you're now full-time photographer.
I am.
Making your living doing that.
I am.
And that's a relatively new thing for you.
Yes.
And I've been seeing your work. It looks really nice. And I've seen your work before you, even a photographer, some stuff that you do on the side.
Yeah.
And it had a really nice feel to it. And I was very happy for you to see you kind of transition into doing that. So I'd love to talk about that whole process and everything else. But in the past, you were, what was your position at Main Home Design?
I was the art director there.
Art director. And so you worked with a lot of people submitting photography and dealing with that and everything. And now you're on the other side of
yes.
it. Yes. So that's pretty cool. So my de facto sponsor today, Time and Tide Coffee. Delicious coffee.
It's good coffee.
Very nice people that moved here from Brooklyn.
Oh, okay.
All the way. They thought we got to go someplace cool rather than Brooklyn. And we want to go to Biddeford. So, but yeah, they're not actually sponsors, but I love their coffee and I love their sweatshirt that I bought this morning. So I told
you got it this morning.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
So yeah, tag them on this post, Tim. Well, he's on the headphones already. So anyways, Heidi Kern, thanks for coming in. Good to see you. Glad to talk to you.
Thanks for
and
having me, Trey.
I also want to give you a bit of a compliment. You've always, in working with you at Main Home Design and everything else, I've just always found you to be a genuine, nice person. And that, like, first and foremost, was always a nice thing to interact with. And that's a really cool thing. You're a nice
Thank
person.
You. I so. Appreciate that.
But aside from that, you're working as a photographer now. So how's that going?
It's great. It was a slow time coming, and all of a sudden, like, quick. You know,
yeah.
Like I knew that I wanted to transition to it. But
how long had you known that you wanted to, like, I'd like to be behind the lens doing this stuff?
Well, funny enough, I was just going through some old journals, and I saw in 2014, my, like, you know, New Year's resolution was buy a camera.
Oh, cool.
So that was 14. I think it actually took me a couple years before I finally did that. So it was 16, and I spent a couple years, you know, learning it.
Right.
And so I think it was, you know, 17, 18, I was like, okay, this is my long-term plan.
Right.
And, in 2018, I took the leap.
The leap.
Yes. The big leap.
So,
the big jump.
How has your time as an art director influenced what you actually shoot? How do you check that experience and use it to inform what you shoot?
It, I really feel like my path kind of led me right to, you know, where I needed to be. I feel like I couldn't be where I am today with photography if it wasn't for my experience as an art director. It's knowing, you know, having been on the other side, kind of knowing what, you know, what an art director is looking for as far mm-hmm. as, an editorial shoot, especially, you know, details, wide shots,
right.
you know, verticals, horizontals, you know, all of that has really helped me. Composition, all of that.
Right.
I was a painting major.
Oh,
and
cool.
So
you had a lot of composition training and everything else.
So
to begin
I did.
With.
I mean, that led me into graphic design, and which led into art directing. And so I kind of feel like all of that background has really influenced, you know, who I am as a photographer.
Right. What subjects are you most attracted to in shooting right now?
Personally or in professional
well,
work that I'm doing?
Go through them both. I mean, there's going to be one thing that pays the bills, and then there's going to be
right.
another thing that, you know, personally you just get more or the most fulfillment from, I guess.
personally, I love nature, you know, being outside, being at the ocean, being at the beach. I love bringing in lifestyle to that, and kind of evoking a mood, mm-hmm. or, you know, kind of some sort of, elusive type of, you know, feeling, so that each person can kind of feel their own story.
Right.
From
allow
it.
For that yes. interpretation and allow for that, that emotion to transfer and let them kind of make a kind of a inference of meaning out of it.
Right.
I think.
Right. Professionally, I try to bring that into it. I do, you know, I tell brand stories mm-hmm. For small, medium, sized companies. And, you know, I do that through, producing photographs, content for them. And, so I do try to bring that over. I do a lot of interior photography, for both hospitality and, you know, builders and architects.
So how have
and
you
so
found
forth.
the challenge of shooting interior spaces? I know for me starting out, that was, I gave up. I like completely got access to a nice location halfway through the day. I was like, nope, I'm done. I'm not doing this. And again, luckily they weren't paying me and it was just on my own dime and I was experimenting, but it was very difficult.
It's incredibly difficult. Having worked with so many amazing photographers such as yourself, you know, through Main Home and Design, I think when I first got my camera, because I knew what I wanted it to look like, mm-hmm. I thought I could just go
just do it.
Do it. And, you know, I really, you know, that was really a learning process, a constant, you know, constant, right. still learning process. But I did lots of trial and error, lots of studying. I did a
what
workshop.
What are the good, like, kind of like steps that you've gotten learning, like, oh, like things that have clicked and help you progress?
I think, honestly, a lot of just experimenting on my own. Mm-hmm. I did a workshop with Scott Francis, and that was amazing.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, he was incredible. So I shadowed him for a while. And I think just talking with other photographers and learning as I go.
Right.
Working with editors, I think that the post is actually like such a thing that you don't normally think about going into photography and how much, you know, post really is just right. as important as the shooting, if not more important. And
oh, yeah.
it's a whole other beast on its own as far as learning.
It was interesting for me when I started out, the edge that I had was that I knew Photoshop from architectural school for putting, I thought, oh, I can put these great presentations together using layering in Photoshop. So I can take my hand sketches and everything else and put them together with hard line drawings and stuff and kind of make this neat effect. And then when I went to shoot, I'd use the strobe that I bought and it would just make everything look like there was a flash layer in there and it just looked harsh and I didn't like it much. So I started out by blending layers before I really knew what that was. I was like, if I keep the camera in the same spot, I can do multiple layers and then I can just by hand paint these together. And it allowed me with how cameras were at the time for, you know, a much more narrow dynamic range. It allowed me to expand that dynamic range, but not to overdo it as far as make it look like HDR, what we think of
right.
HDR. And that gave me, I think, a pretty solid advantage at that point as far as a look and feel that wasn't overly strobed. And just as I played around with the strobes more, I found how you could add those in and make them look natural and eliminate kind of the shadow lines that they cast in post-production. But yeah, that post-production part of it in digital photography is just a huge second part of the artistic touch.
Yes.
And I got to a point where I realized like I don't have the technical stamina to continue to do these at the level that I want them done. And I need to hire someone who has training and ability and interest in doing that, because I'm going to start, you know, shorting myself and the quality that I deliver if I keep doing this. And I knew that I couldn't earn as much money if I were doing both of those things. But it was a huge risk to go out and get someone to be able to work with you seamlessly to do that. And that was a lot of trial and error figuring all that out as well. But what have you learned in post as far as the look and feel and the direction that you go? What's your post process?
It depends on the type of shoot. If it's an interior shoot, I do have someone that I work with, and it's been a process between us really getting down that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Because
you have someone that you work with for post as well?
Mm-hmm, I do.
To get someone who's really skilled at that is a huge asset. That's cool.
It was a painful process. Yeah. And and getting that, because you want it to still have your own artistic touch. You don't want it to be become something else.
Right. But you have to allow for that other entity to inject their creativity and vision into it as well. Because if you block too much of that, you get a technician. And that, it just doesn't end up as well. And there's less ownership and personal investment too, I find. So.
And so that's been super helpful. And still always, I feel like always evolving too, you know, as I'm taking on bigger commercial jobs too, you know, that's been a process that's kind of evolved.
How have you felt going into essentially self-employment? Talk to me about that.
I would say that I had been self-employed before the magazine, doing graphic design, but that was before having kids. And so I would say that it held me back from taking that jump for a while.
So having kids and the added responsibility helped you back.
Yeah, the insurance, you know, everything. And
you get that, sure.
And it is, it's hard. It's running a business is really hard, but it's super gratifying. And I had been with Main Home and Design for 8 years, and I was ready for this change, and it's been good.
Yep.
You know, it's been really good.
What's been the most difficult part of moving into self-employment as a creative for you?
I think the most difficult part is the realization that, you know, that you're running a business, you know, you're marketing, you're keeping the books, you know, that things aren't just going to necessarily fall into your lap, that you're basically hustling and
so at 4 a.m. you go,
exactly.
I just kind of imagine that everyone else that is self-employed, especially as a creative, might suffer from very, very mild PTSD. Yeah, it's just a constant. I listened to an interesting thing where they were talking to someone who had PTSD, and it's that you spend so much time at that extremely elevated level of alertness and stress that it goes from your conscious nervous system, and it transfers that stress basically in awareness over to your autonomic nervous system. So like your stomach takes care of itself and your heartbeat takes care of itself, your autonomic system all of a sudden puts you and just says, all right, we're just in a constant state of heightened awareness and stress constantly.
Yes.
And so it's not in your conscious anymore. It's in your subconscious autonomic system, I guess. And this obviously is a very limited understanding that I would have of these kind of things. But in listening to that, I was like, I experience like, you know, 1/100th of that, I would imagine, just constantly, because you have this weight on you constantly of you've got to make the money, you've got to bring the jobs in, you've got to. And that's a hard thing, especially for someone who's creative as a stereotype. I think creatives are not generally made to bear a lot of stress. I think they're more sensitive, and and that sensitivity brings perceptiveness, that which allows for a more connected state between all aspects of your life, that I think then it allows for that creativity, but it comes with the drawback of being overly sensitive to, you know, any stimulus, including the constant stress of running a business. Mm-hmm. So fun stuff.
I know. The first year, I don't think I slept more than 3 or 4 hours a night because, you know, getting things up and running, getting, taking anything that came my way.
Sure.
Because of the fear of, you know, well, what if this is it? What if there isn't anything next month?
Yep.
And so this year has been, you know, I think I've really taken a step back and been able to take a look at like the big picture and see, you know, see what areas I, you know, the jobs are coming in and kind of niching down more and being able to focus on that rather than kind of just letting everything flow in.
Right. So. Man, that took me like a decade to get to that point of like, maybe I should not do some jobs because it's too much of a tax on me and not enough of a return. That is some more maturity than I have experienced in my life.
Well, I, you know, it'll be another thing to actually do it, but you know, I guess it just kind of got to the realization that, you know, I just can't work day and night always.
Right.
So
do you work out of a home office?
I do. I have a studio in Portland that I was sharing with Molly and Jessica from that had also been at the magazine, but I just find that I'm really not able to get up there as much. I live in Kennebunk, and it, you know, one of the things that is nice is being able to, you know, pick the kids up from school and.
Sure.
And so I think that I'm going to let go. And for now, I've been working out of my home. And
the hard thing for me when I did work out of my house was that I would just work nonstop.
Yeah.
Like after dinner, I'd be like, well, I can go up and just finish that one image.
That was the idea with getting the studio, was to kind of prevent that. But I'm trying to set a little more
boundaries.
So far it's, you know.
Yeah. I think if you could at least have like a, you have to walk outside to get to your studio. Like if you could have it in a separate garage on the second floor, it would probably be a lot more, conducive to healthy work habits, but there's a lot of good space in Biddeford. So.
I've been looking in Biddeford. It's a lot closer for me, and I love the idea of a, you know, a creative space. I do think it helps to also kind of clear your head and just be outside of the house. Because I'm also like, oh, why don't I throw in some laundry in the middle of the day, or you know, like you know, a million other things.
Yeah, if you can get something that's not too much overhead, that's really nice.
Yes.
So how has your, for me, my significant other, Amber, was just extremely instrumental in, I mean, it's just laughable that some people would think I'm going to make a living off of taking pretty pictures, yet people are able to do it. And if I look back at my younger self thinking that I was going to do that, it seems like an absurd idea, but somehow it worked out. And for some reason, my wife didn't laugh at me and tell me, no, you need to do something. You know, I'm not going to sign off, whatever. She was just totally like, yeah, that's great. Go get them. You know, and I look at that and I'm like, if I was you, I would have been a little more critical and blah, blah, blah. That's why I'm just a bad person. But how has your significant other been able to work with you on like, hey, I'm going to be creatively self-employed? I know for some people that can be an interesting path.
Well, he's a creative as well.
Oh, what's he do?
He's an art director. Also,
you must have a fantastic home.
You know, I think we do. We have a nice home, but I think that it's been. I think when there's two creatives together, sometimes that's. You know, there isn't
high opinions clashing.
Not so much that. I just feel like, you know, there isn't that voice of reason sometimes of like, well, how are we going to pay our bills? But right. but I think, you know, he's been in the field also for a long time. So it's been great because I'm able to also bounce a lot of ideas. And he's actually a great photo editor as well. So great. If I am working on something and I get stuck, you know, he can weigh in or right. even hop in physically and get in there and help me.
Oh, that's great.
Edit. Yeah. So it's been great to have that collaboration, which has been really good. I would say that that's one of the main things I miss about being at the magazine. An art director is you're in that group and you're collaborating with so right. many other amazingly smart people. And I miss that on a daily basis. Right. I'd say that's probably one of the things that.
Yeah, because when I got my start, I didn't know who to go to say, I like this, but do you think it's good? Mm-hmm, like, because mm-hmm. most of the people I had to interact with were, I had one friend that I felt was well-informed and would be cruelly honest with me, which is very important.
Yes.
And that was Caleb Johnson, and he, you know, seemed to think everything looked fine, which was nice. But it was very difficult, aside from that, to come across people that would say, no, this is no good. You know, you need to do this, that, and the other. Most everyone was just like, that's great, Trent. Keep it up, you know, and which is nice, but it's hard to find that critical feedback, you know. And I come from an architecture background where it's very much the culture of critical feedback to improvement, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How did you find that critical feedback in growing what you're doing, aside from your husband, obviously, who's probably used to that environment as well?
It's hard to find because it, like you say, it's hard to find someone you trust. My good friend Jeff Roberts has been super helpful as far as he'll give me, you know, honest feedback. It's hard though when everyone's busy and working, you're afraid to impose on someone.
Right.
I've often thought like, you know, I wish there was like a more of a community like that got together and we could critique, because that's such a part of you know, having been gone to art school and all that,
right.
And I loved your series that you were doing when you were doing the Let's Get Critical.
Oh, yeah.
I really enjoyed that.
I've just done too much Let's Be Busy with Work and
I know
not being
well
able
that's
to
the
do
thing
those.
Same, like it's really hard. Through the workshop I did with Scott, a few of us stayed in touch and we'll often, you know, email each other,
right.
like, you know, what do you suggest kind of a thing. Right. So I have some friends that are interior photographers in other parts of the country and we'll try to swap feedback.
I wonder
feedback.
If there's a good way to address that on a local level, to be physically in the same space and to just share, you know, loving but kind, blah, blah, blah. You know, critical feedback because I look at coming together weekly has always meant like a church kind of background
right.
thing. But if you could, you know, like, oh, it's Tuesday night and we do critical feedback night at somewhere. And,
yeah.
You know, that'd be interesting. I'm sure something like that happens, but my antisocial nature probably just makes me stay at home.
I feel like that's the thing with a lot of artists, right?
I mean, unite separately in your own homes.
So, and just being busy. And Maine is kind of spread out in that way, too.
Yeah.
You know? So when I had first thought about the space in Portland, I mean, that was something I had in the back of my mind, was that, you know, maybe I would try to get together some kind of a group. Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
Yeah, work. Not always easy work. To collaborate or wrangle cats together. It's can be weird. How have you found coming to, I know when I started out, figuring out how much to charge was always a difficult thing for me commercially. I knew what a magazine would pay me, but I knew I couldn't make a living off of only doing that. How did you go about figuring out like, all right, here's what I got to charge for that. Here's what I got to charge for this. Here's what, you know, my overhead's going to be, here's what my equipment costs, are, blah, blah, blah. There's a lot to figure out there. So
much to figure out. And Maine being kind of a small market, I feel that it's still hard to figure that out.
Yeah.
I think that it was a combination between asking people, and some people are willing to share, some people aren't, you know, asking people in the local market. I listened to tons of podcasts and, you know, various
A photo
groups.
Editor, I think, has some really good podcasts or YouTube videos on like doing commercial gigs and mm-hmm. all the ins and outs of it and everything. So
yeah, I think just a bunch of different resources, and then also kind of looking at, you know, my overhead and how limited, you know, there's only so many days in a year, and, you know, what will it take to sustain
right.
a business. And
my wife's been very instrumental in making me plan conservatively, so I don't have that stress weighing on sensitive Trent, you know, as far as, so she made us pay everything off and operate only in cash.
I love that. I've talked to her about that, and I just think that's amazing.
It's hard to get her to talk. That's a joke. But that's been, I've found that we're able to do that, which is great. And obviously that's a very difficult place to get to, but once you can get there, the ability to operate from that position is so much more freeing. And by limiting, like, get a junker car, you know, invest mm-hmm. in equipment that you only have to buy once and treat it nice and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, limit your vacations and out to eat and all that, so you can get to that place. So, you know, you don't have to, you know, think about living in debt and everything else constantly, especially as a creative. I can't recommend that enough to try and eliminate that financial pressure of, well, I got to take all the jobs I can because, right. you know, I need the money. And I still kind of struggle with what is my motivation when I'm shooting, because I'm very motivated by finances because I grew up listening to my parents every month. They probably shouldn't have talked about it in front of me, but they'd kind of say like, well, we're $200 in the hole this month. We cannot do this and do that. And, you know, we just didn't have much money. And I was, even as a kid, I remember just kind of like, oh, that doesn't feel good. And so there's always kind of that thing biting. And I think sometimes I over prioritize the validity of what I'm doing and my worth based on what I can bring in. I've been overly motivated by that, I think. But at the same time, if you're not, you know, able to feed yourself and pay for housing, that's detrimental. So whatever. So
I think that was my face too when you said, oh, you must have a really nice home. I was like, well, we do, but we have definitely, that has been, we've never wanted to stretch or like live beyond. Mm. We want to feel secure and not, you know, not feel like we're stretching.
Right.
So, that was why, yeah, it's been important. We're not debt free completely, but we're pretty, you know,
keep at it.
We're getting there.
You can
there.
Do it.
I know. I remember that talk with her, and it's super motivating.
Yeah, she wants to go. One of the many things that she wants to do. Apparently, I have a very highly industrious wife. She's really trying to stay home and homeschool the kids, but she's constantly trying to do all these other things as well. She's, yeah, kind of crazy like that. But she'd love to do like financial advising, just basically on that, like, all right, here's how you can live debt free, because it's a nicer way to live.
It really is the mentally the shift of paying off debts and feeling in control of all of that is very freeing, I think.
Yeah I remember when we first paid off our student loans, I was just like, whoa, we don't have that anymore. That's nice.
Yeah.
So, where do you pull from creatively? Like, how do you process and come to an idea of what you like and create? Like, to really get deep on that. And remind me to ask you after this about some of the fine art prints and stuff you're doing. I want to talk to you about that.
So where do I pull from creatively? I mean, my first step, if I'm ever feeling like I need, if I'm blocked or need anything, is to go to the ocean, to just go outside, you know? So I would say I pull from nature, and as far as other inspirations, you know, looking at other artists, not necessarily photographers, but going to a museum or pulling out, you know, a Rothko book, or just, you know, looking, just trying to get inspired by art.
Right. I still don't understand art well enough to, but I mean, maybe you're really not supposed to understand it is the point, but you're supposed to feel something rather than understand something. I don't know. But I watched who the bleep is Jackson Pollock. Have you seen that?
No.
Or no. Yeah, I think that's it. This woman in the Inland Empire in California goes to a garage sale and gets a Jackson Pollock painting for $10.
Really?
And she brings it home as a gift for someone else. They're like, I don't want that piece of crap. They live she lives in a trailer. It's no big deal, right? And she's a real unique truck driving character, salty. And the local, she puts it back in a yard sale, and the local art teacher comes by and says, that looks like a Jackson Pollock. And the line from her is, who the F is Jackson Pollock? And so she looks into it and she's like, whoa, okay. And has all this work done to verify, like, yeah, there's like a fingerprint on it that's his and,
wow,
and other stuff, right? But the art community won't accept it. So this high end, fine art, high art, whatever community is extremely interesting to me, just from watching this movie, that there's all this, you know, class structure and gatekeepers and all that. But at the core of it is just subjective creations from, you know, creative people, you know, and then they're evaluating things and putting millions of dollars of worth on these subjective creations, and what it says about our society and everything else is a really interesting conversation. And there's this one guy in the movie who's an art critic, and he's just the most outlandish, just kind of weird guy, but it looks like it's just a huge show, but you see it and you think he might know what he's talking about. And if he does, that's really weird, you know? So I'm fascinated by it, and I've more recently actually stepped into producing art with a camera rather than trying to beautifully document things. That's what I've been doing the whole time I've been a photographer, has been documenting the design space and portraiture. And those are all very literal approaches, very, you know, I usually start square composition straight on and break from that when needed. But to go out and create something that's supposed to be evocative just for the emotion of what you see, and I've chosen to go very abstract in that. And I think a lot of that has to do with the lack of coming into understanding that there is a huge lack of clarity in life in general, and what I'm producing is an extension of that. And that's interesting to me, and I think that's truly what art should be if it's being done, is some kind of expression of a deeper search for truth in some way. So I'm just going on, and my wife always tells me I should talk less. But
no, I love it. I love it. I love talking to you.
So the stuff that that you're producing, I noticed in one of your Instagram posts that you had a framed thing on the wall, and it was something like, hey, cool to see this in a space, whatever. Right. How's your experience been with going into selling prints or producing prints and all that?
How has it been? It's time consuming.
Sure.
But
I'm asking because I'm going that direction.
Yeah, but it's, I have back and forth with printing it myself and, you know, having it printed somewhere.
Boy, I hate printing.
I invested in a beautiful printer and it prints these large.
We had a printer. I don't know what happened to it. But I could never run it. Tim had to run it. And it was just such a pain. But
really? Well, this one's super easy to use. It's just, I think I have a hard time kind of shifting. It's hard for me to go from doing, you know, from like editing or culling photos and then printing. And like, so I tend to like put it off. But anyway, it's been great. And that's a chance for me to really, I feel like sometimes I'll even see things while I'm out on a shoot.
Right.
And I'll take it and, you know, and kind of hone in on, you know, what it is that I want to do. And I'm finding that a lot of my graphic design background really comes out in a lot of those prints. As far as they tend to be graphic and like textural,
right.
Less, like you say, documentation of, right. of a moment. And, but it's been, you know, it's been good, and it people that I know and people that I don't know, and so it's exciting, you know.
That's cool. Yeah. Do you? So you're kind of doing both printing yourself and having them printed elsewhere.
Well, I've experimented with both. Right now, I am printing myself. If I do get a large order and it needs to be shipped somewhere, I have
large as in size.
Yeah. Yep. You know, size and like many prints.
Okay.
Then I may work. I have a printer that will drop ship it. But I have control issues. Obviously I want to, you know, like I,
and
I know, right. But it's hard to, I don't like having them drop shipped. I like to, you know, see them and make sure the color's correct. That was why I ended up getting the printer, is to have more of that artistic control.
How big are you printing?
I mean, 20 by 24 is really about the largest.
Pretty good size.
I feel like most people are around the 12 by 12 seems to be a pretty popular size. Mm-hmm. You know, and then framed, and then
So do you sell just the print, or do you frame and then sell, or?
I have been selling just the prints and a few framed. I've again experimenting on that, but I think that it usually works out best for people to do their own framing. They can pick out exactly what they want. And
me having control issues as well. I want to frame too. I
want
to do the print and I want to do the frame, and I want to have a good friend of mine, Gabe Sutton, do the frame and have it beautiful and have like just this perfect relief around the whole way and not have glass over it. And control freak.
I know right?
But have you, what are you printing on? Have you found different ways of printing? I think
these are printed a certain way, and then
I've had stuff printed on aluminum, and I know there's this process where they print on the back of like plexiglass, but that adds this weird kind of depth and light thing. And
I've just been printing on this beautiful matte paper.
I really like a good matte paper
with different surfaces, but I know to get really big, you know, the metals or some of the plexiglass, I think maybe like my next step if I want to go large. So I just haven't gone super large yet.
And how are you showing them and selling them?
At Instagram and my website.
And really, people just contact you through Instagram, like, hey, can I buy a print of that? Or all right, I'm storing all this information away. I'm right on the edge of doing that, but I've never done it, so I'm just kind of like trying to talk myself up and figure out.
It is a pretty big time commitment and something that I you know, still kind of weigh whether or not it's worth the effort, but I feel like the artist in me is you know, it's more like fun work that I'm you know, not that I'm not having fun on my commercial work, but it's a different type of process process. And also Etsy, actually. I've sold through Etsy as well. It took a little bit to set up, but then it's, you know, just runs itself.
Right.
And
So I was just out in Laguna, La Jolla. I knew it was a La. We were out there and I walked around downtown, around the place where we were shooting. And there's a bunch of photo galleries that were selling not great work for a lot of money. And I don't know if it's just like, oh, you can do that in places where there's just obscene amounts of money, or, you know, what the deal is there. But, you know, obviously being a, you know, highly financially motivated individual that I know I need to work on that. I was like, that'd be nice.
Yeah, you know.
But I just this, you know, over Christmas basically really started like, all right, let's see what I can do with this. And just the process of breaking the mold for what I do typically was really rewarding.
That you posted, beautiful.
Yeah, it's just so neat to go out and do something that doesn't have to be anything but just an idea and an expression of feeling to a degree, and to just be able to play around with it. And I just found it was so neat to use the forest as selecting the color palette and then abstract it and see what you can do. And it's really neat what you can come up with. And that was really fun and rewarding. I now have to go through and select those ones that I think come through the most clear of what I think is good from them, and then make that commitment to at least produce 3 to 4 of them. And I don't know if I should approach a gallery or just sell them online. The scale I want to produce them at is going to be pretty large. So I feel like it should be in a gallery, but who knows? We'll see. Yeah,
that's awesome.
But what do you see in your future? What are you aiming at? What are your, give me your 5 to 10 year plan.
So I would say that I am aiming at, some more travel. I have some more travel coming up this year.
Oh, cool. Are you aiming at trying to do more like travel photography and such?
Now, not travel photography, but, you know, traveling just different, I guess I should say, you know, just growing my market a little bit more, as far as clients go.
Yep. So what's your plan or idea on how to do that without also getting into, I should ask you, like, it's a weird thing with photographers that it's kind of like a dark art where you're not really willing to share everything because you feel like, I figured it out, I'm getting by. If anyone else figures it out, then everyone else is going to find out that I'm an imposter syndrome, and that anyone can do it, and I'm not of any value, so I can't tell anyone. And it's a psychological thing. Like, I don't follow too many other photographers that would be my competition, because anytime I see them getting work, I'm like, I'm a failure. No one's ever going to use me again. I might as well go pound sand, whatever, you know. But how do you deal with that emotion of seeing other people get work that you would like, for one, and process that? Mm-hmm. And what's your, you know, generally speaking, what's your marketing strategy for expanding to clients?
I feel like Instagram and social media has been really, it's one of those things where it's been great for small businesses like ours, but also, like, I feel like emotionally it is like everything you just said, like, it's crazy. And I've actually tried to limit how much I'm on there, just kind of scrolling through. I mean,
I get sucked in 10, 15 minutes, drop of a hat. I'm
easily,
like, stop.
Easily. But you can get into your head of like, oh, you know, I'm missing out, you know, I'm missing out on this. But the other side of that is to try to, you know, I try to just practice the mindset of abundance, that there is, you know, there is enough for everyone
to go around.
And, you know, I feel that like I mentioned, Jeff, you know, he's been super generous. He's
the couple times I've interacted with Jeff, he seems like a really outgoing, really nice guy.
He is.
And his work's really nice too.
And because he was so, you know, I did have a lot of people when I started photography that were really guarded. They were didn't want to even talk to me, you know, about it. We're very protective. But you know, you can kind of choose to live in fear and scarcity, or you can choose to live in abundance and share. Right. And I feel like that, has served me well as far as that. And as far as, you know, marketing, I think, one of the things that I did this January was kind of just look through the past year and 2 years and kind of look at, you know, who were my biggest clients, where, you know, how did they come to me? And then kind of just thinking about, from there, kind of taking that as a jump off point, like, is there room to grow with them? Do they have no other people, you know, kind of start with what I already have,
right,
and nurture them and grow. And then, you know, and then try to look to see which shoots were the most successful, and kind of just try to look for more of those,
right,
you know, more of that type of thing.
What type of clients do you best connect and, create with?
I think it's the clients that appreciate, your input and creativity, but are also, they have an open mind, but they know a little bit about what they want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel that that's the collaboration with the client seems to be the best.
Yeah. I really appreciate that as well, because anytime I go to shoot a project, if I'm just given a blank slate, it's extremely stressful because, you know, in the past, people would say, we like what you do, just go do it and we'll give you the key. And, you know, and then it's like, all right, well, I better show up at dawn and stay till after dark and shoot absolutely as much as I can. And that wears you out, and you don't eliminate bad ideas as easily, and you shoot more, your quality goes down, your quantity goes up. It's going to happen if you don't have a preconceived idea of what you want to focus on. And to have a client that has at least a brand strategy and, you know, look and feel that gels with what you naturally do, and that provides some structure and boundaries to what you're doing in that day, and that they understand that we're going to focus on these things and give them the appropriate amount of time, you know, that's a really good situation to be in. And interestingly, I found that the bigger the client, like when you start to shoot for a national brand, your creativity drops pretty significantly sometimes, because that national brand will have extremely focused brand identity. So there'll be a level of creativity, of course, but it's very, very like, we need this, we need that, it has to be this, it has to be in this part and that part. And there's a lot of other cooks in the kitchen that eliminate a lot of other options. So your area of creativity just gets smaller, and the money more than compensates for that. So that's great. But at the same time, it's you have to learn when you're shooting as a commercial photographer, in that situation, especially to, you know, I found like I'll state my opinion twice. I'll say it once. If they ignore it, I'll find another opportunity to put it in there again, just to make sure. And if they ignore it again, I let it go, you know? And sometimes I'll take it and maybe, you know, move left of center, right of center on their brand identity to see how it feels. But overall, the creativity is spread amongst more of a broad band of, you know, opinions. So it's a little less just like whatever you want, you know,
which
has its pluses and minuses, which
right.
is interesting. So one of the most creative fulfilling jobs, commercial jobs I've done was with Thomas Mosier when Susan, I can't believe I'm blanking on her last name, but she was the marketing director there at that time. And she basically eliminated all styling or anything else and basically gave us a nice floor and a nice wall to play with and the furniture. And it was just all about composition and light and like zeroing in on these details and just extreme minimal approach. And for me, I was just like, this is amazing because you had this beautiful material of wood and texture and craft and everything else. And then it was just light and composition. That was really nice. And it was very open creatively within those bounds, which was really nice. So that was interesting. But what's the most fulfilling job you've done?
Oh, I don't know if I could really.
There's one in your head right now seeing.
I mean, I go to a few, but I've worked with Cousins Maine Lobster from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
They are.
What kind of stuff do you shoot with them?
So I do a variety of things for them, but I do a lot of their brand lifestyle things.
So do you go out on the boats and stuff? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's cool.
So that's really fun. And I mean, I think I went to them because it's been my 3 or 4 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And they're a national brand now, and they have, franchises all over the country and,
oh, wow.
And in a few other countries as well. And so that's been exciting to kind of work with them on their brand vision and they come at it where they do have, ideas and then they kind of allow me the freedom to bring my
now, do they have a kind of a marketing team in-house or do they go through an ad agency or
they have an in-house marketing team.
So that's probably a little bit more creative approach maybe or open to your input probably than if an agency was
open to my input but again like they they come to me with their ideas, they have very specific brand identity.
Sure.
So it's been great. And they have lots of franchisees and they all will come to Maine to train on the lobster boats here, which I think is amazing. So
now who comes to train?
So the owners in Florida, they bought a franchise. They believe really strongly that, they should come to Maine, actually learn about how the lobster is caught, go out on the boat,
right.
So that they can really speak to the process. See how it's processed in the plant and how it supports the Maine economy and not just be, kind of.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
So it's been really cool. They're a great company and it's been exciting. So.
So thinking of that, what's been your most harsh shooting conditions? I'll start with one of mine. We spent 2 days on a lake in Connecticut in the wind outdoors in January last year filming. And that was, I had a full body, snowmobile suit on. That was brutal. Very brutal. But how about you?
Oh man, it doesn't compare to that. I mean, I've done last January, I did an outdoor, exterior home shoot.
Mm-hmm.
But I realized that with my Camranger, I could pull my car up and go in the car and click capture because I wanted to get the sunset. Yep. And
100%. I still do that for sure.
So I thought
the only
I was
problem
like,
is
so
the batteries
brilliant.
Run out pretty quick when they're
out. Yeah,
they
do. It was really cold.
Yeah. Yeah, when I figured out, when I first started, you didn't have that ability to Wi-Fi connect. And once it did, I was like, oh, I'm sitting in the car.
Yeah, I thought this was, my own magical, amazing idea. So,
are you using the Camranger 1 or 2?
I don't even know.
Does it have the two little antennas on the side?
No.
No? So the first, it's in the little white.
White.
White guy, yeah. They have the second one. It seems, I think it's probably just a stronger signal, but
gotcha.
I had to. Now I used, which Canon are you using right now?
I have the 4 now.
I use the Wi-Fi settings just off of the 4, and I actually preferred that to the Cam Ranger because you didn't have the bumping into the cord going into the camera, and you didn't have another set of batteries.
Oh,
to.
Oh, that's brilliant.
And the Canon app was not that bad. The Cam Ranger app in working with a Canon is better than the Canon app, but it does come with the frustration of having another set of batteries, another thing to hang off the tripod, and possibly having to, you know, spend $800 to $1,000 to repair your USB every year.
Yes, that's...
I hate that.
I know.
But I got the newest version of Cam Ranger when we switched over to the Fuji because the Wi-Fi on the Fuji was so horrible.
Oh.
It wasn't as good as the Canon. And I really hate having that other thing to, you know, but it's what we have to do now. But you should try the Canon app, see what you think. It might not be as powerful and
does
as reliable.
You mean bounce just to the Canon app and check it out, or bouncing it to the Cam Ranger?
Just to like iPad to camera.
Oh, I haven't tried. I mean, I've done it to my phone, like if I'm like just out on a fun shoot and I want to.
I would shoot professionally off that live view and everything else, and it worked really well.
Cool.
I just wish that these camera companies would have an app that works as well as Cam Ranger without having to have
the second.
Yep. Like if Cam Ranger could just use their app to interact with camera and not have to have another thing to.
Yes.
I'd pay $200 just for the app. You know,
right.
It's fine.
Right.
But whatever. Let's see. What else should we talk about?
I don't know. I've covered a lot.
Yeah. Keep going. Keep going. I'm finishing off coffee, so.
How about you? What's coming up for 2020?
To go back to the beginning, I started out knowing I wanted to get an established base of people I wanted to work with in Maine,
mm-hmm.
And then use that to just make concentric circles out mm-hmm. of clients after that. And, you know, beyond Boston, you can't physically go and meet clients to convince them to use you, really, not effectively. And so I spent a lot of time investing in Maine, and then started going and strategically visiting firms in Boston. And now I'm mostly trying to focus my efforts on like national brands that mm-hmm. either are national level architectural firms or brands that could actually use the kind of photography that an architectural photographer produces. And I definitely want to start producing fine art, because I know to get to a point where you can charge an exorbitant sum for art, you have to have a pretty long history, I think, you know, mm-hmm. in doing it. So by the time I'm 65, I'd like it if I could just wander out into the woods and wave a camera around and create and, you know, keep myself busy and make something beautiful out of that. 'Cause I'd like to not have to travel, constantly, to make money. So, and just the creative process with fine art, kind of eliminating the client and just creating in that way, I've found to be very interesting. So I think that's probably the main thing in 2020 for me is looking at developing that. And then also, obviously, actually, I kind of want to start a gallery in Biddeford as well, because I think Biddeford's not ripe for it yet, but you know it's going to happen,
mm-hmm.
and it would be really nice to have a place where you could display that. But I would imagine the overhead of keeping a space like that, fitting out a space like that, and then you know, producing the art as far as cost of printing and framing and everything else to put it in there, what you'd have to charge to, you know, get that. I still don't think the walk-by traffic in Biddeford is going to support that, mm-hmm. but maybe I'm wrong. I mean, there's a really nice restaurant. There's a couple now, like, you know, very nice restaurants in Biddeford. So maybe. I don't know. I always have a lot of things going on in my head. And I think it's probably things sparking off here and there that hopefully eventually I keep and grab onto one. I'm still working on a documentary about faith, trying to get that finished. I got to get that finished. Yeah. That's like 4 years in the making. And I got a quote from Ken Burns, not like he called me and gave me the quote, but I heard a quote by Ken Burns the other day that it's the artist's responsibility to take the viewer into hell and also their responsibility to lead them out. Like that's I think a very interesting take on, you know, as a way of learning kind of failure. I was talking yesterday about this with a friend that failure is your best way of really learning. And I've done a lot of that. So I think taking with a film on faith, I think, you know, taking them to that point of, you know, nihilism, but bringing a person back to an ability to see that there is something truly beautiful and magical and meaningful and worthwhile to this life is difficult to go there and come back, but not impossible. So there's a little bit of light conversation for you. So we take pretty pictures. But anywho, yeah. How about you? 2020. What are your goals in 2020?
My personal goals are to definitely try not to work around the clock, like I mentioned before, and to, you know, to kind of just continue on growing my business.
Right.
So, you know, kind of simple, really, but.
Right. Simple but difficult.
Simple but difficult. Right. Yes. I love editorial work, but, you know, possibly do a little less editorial work and a little more commercial work.
Yeah, if you can. Editorial work's really great because it has a very, like we were talking before, a very broad creative thing to it. That is very nice to work in that way. But yeah, I mean, editorial is always going to be somewhere between like New York Times wants to pay you $200 a day and, you know, a regional publication for a full day is going to be like 800-ish, you know, and that's with the amount of post-production and expenses and just expenses of feeding yourself and getting to the shoot and, you know, paying for an assistant or whatever else, you're just not going to make a living on it unless you can genuinely use those projects to secure further clients or resell those images,
right,
which is difficult.
Right.
you know that.
Yes.
But, well, cool. I think that is a wonderful conversation about what would you say you're in your sophomore or junior year of of being on your own.
Yes.
Yeah. But congratulations on doing well and doing it well.
Thank you.
And producing nice work. And thanks for coming in and thanks for sharing your experience that you've had with producing fine art, because that's, you know, I'm not even a freshman there yet in looking into that. So I'm going to keep going that direction, but thanks for coming in and sitting down for a bit.
This is great.
Yeah. Cool. Fun. Best of luck, and let's do this again next year and see where you're at.
That'd be great.
Cool. Thanks.
Thank you.